Deep in the farthest recesses of the most distant jungle lies a city. A city populated by the most mysterious, terrifying, and downright grotesque denizens ever seen by mortal eye. Here, in the darkened corners of this cavernous locale, sits an ordinary, average brick building with an innocuous, ordinary, average blinking neon sign which reads, On Air. It is here where each week, Seth Breedlove and Mark Matzke convene to discuss the greatest mysteries the world has ever known. Now, strap on your hiking boots, grab your trusty walking stick, and don't forget your machete as we begin our journey through Monsteropolis.
Coming to you live from Monsteropolis. This is Monsteropolis, a show about anomalies, legends, and monsters. I'm one of your hosts. My name is Seth Breedlove, joined today by my pal, Mark Matzke.
Greetings. How are you?
I said your name for you this week.
Thank you.
I like to change it up. Keep you on your toes.
Yeah, I
You never know. You never know what you're going
to
get.
Really prefer not to say my own name. Yeah. It seems self-aggrandizing.
It does.
Somehow.
I think that every time you say your own name.
You know what we have not done in a couple shows is give any information
about who we are, what the show is.
So this is the official podcast of Small Town Monsters, and you can visit us at smalltownmonsters.com. Also, Monsteropolis has a Facebook page and a Facebook presence that is, you know, along with the Small Town Monsters community, that is way bigger than, it's like out of control at this point. I feel like there's so many people participating and posting stuff. I can't even keep up with all of that.
Yeah.
So
that's why I put other admins in charge of things like that. We have the Travel Channel trying to poach witnesses. I've actually, that's like Jason's big job right now, is to keep an eye out for like people trying to spam our forum, trying to get people on their weak cable network TV show. I should probably not say that. I've actually been talking to the acquisitions guy at Travel Channel for the last couple of weeks. Anyway, this is the previous show we did was called Sass What. It was Mark and I talking about the Bigfoot phenomena. We did that for 3 or 4 years. And now we've moved on to this show where we can talk about pretty much anything we like. This week we're continuing UFO month and talking about flying saucer movies. I don't know the direction we're taking this or how this could be all over the map. It really could be. If there's an episode that's going to be like a jazz jam session, that's what this episode's
going to be. We're just going to be riffing away.
This is also one of my favorite topics. I did a whole when I very short-lived had a vlog on YouTube, Small Town Filmmaker, which I plan on bringing it back if I ever had the time again. But one of the episodes I did was all about like the inspiration for the movie we made, The Flatwoods Monster, and a lot of that was old flying saucer movies that I'd seen as a kid or was rediscovering in my old age. So this is a topic that I'm very excited to talk about. Also, just because some of my all-time favorite movies are UFO-centric films. So we're going to talk about, this isn't solely going to be rooted in ufology. It's going to be probably as much the pop cultural side of things as us talking about, you know, some of the more para-based aspects of this particular subject, I'm assuming anyway.
I'm assuming the same.
Where do we start?
Well, why don't we start with the topic UFOs and film. Mm-hmm. What would you say is near the top of UFO films?
My absolute favorite's Earth versus the Flying Saucers, and has been since I saw that movie as a kid when my mom introduced me to it.
Flying saucers have invaded our planet. Washington, London, Paris, Moscow are key targets. The whole world is under attack. Can it survive?
And at that time, when I saw that, I didn't have the appreciation for film, cinema.
Yeah.
That was like my pretentious sound.
Right.
I didn't have the appreciation for that stuff that I do today. So I saw that movie just as a kid and thought it was the coolest thing. Mm-hmm. And I knew that it was hokey and cheesy, and it's so hokey and cheesy when I watch it today. And it's still like one of my favorite movies. It's probably in my top 20 favorite films of all time. So that one is my favorite. I do love Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Like, as a movie, obviously as a film, Close Encounters of the Third Kind is just an amazing film.
Final report of any kind of it.
I wouldn't know what kind of report to file, Center.
This is nuts.
Brandon just watched Close Encounters of the Third Kind for the first time the other day.
Really?
Our friend Brandon Dalo, who also does the music for our movies. And I, like, as soon as he texted me that, I was like, oh man, that's Spielberg's most gorgeous movie. Like, to me, that is Spielberg pulling on David Lean harder than he ever has since. Like, that movie to me looks so much like Lawrence of Arabia or Dr. Zhivago, David Lean, but it's like this, it's through this very, like, you know, supernatural UFO lens, sci-fi lens. So,
what was Brandon's reaction? Did he tell you?
He didn't respond. No, he never really? Did. He just said he was watching it. And I think I probably annoyed him because my response was like, oh, that's Spielberg's most gorgeous movie. And there was no response. So I never, I don't know. He might've hated it for all I know.
Oh
yeah. I mean, it's a difficult movie. I know the first time I saw it, you have a hard time with the Richard Dreyfuss character. At the end of the movie, he leaves his wife and kids to go off with the aliens. And I still have issues with that today. As Spielberg said before, like, if he made that movie today, he would, this is what I was talking about with Oliver and the Map. This should be the last movie we're talking about.
No,
not the first. But Spielberg said before, if he made that movie today, at the end of the movie, Richard Dreyfuss wouldn't have gone off with the aliens. Spielberg was making that as a young man who did not have a family, who didn't understand that line of thinking. And he said if he made the two today, it'd be a completely different ending. But the movie is so rooted in ufology. Like, there's parts of that movie that were inspired by the Portage Lakes UFO chase, which is one of my favorite UFO stories. Not Portage Lakes, the Portage County UFO chase. It starts in Portage County, up by the Mogador Reservoir, actually, and heads out into PA.
That's PA.
One of my favorite UFO stories. But he was inspired by that. And then there's other aspects to that movie you watch today, and you can see where he's pulling different, you know, like, there's some Betty and Barney Hill in there. There's the classic, like, Midwest look of everything, which, by the way, the whole movie was shot in, like, Alabama. It was shot in Alabama, in the same town that Adam Wingard's from, actually. But it was set in Indiana. So he wanted that, like, Midwest look. It was filmed, large parts of it were filmed in Alabama, and large parts of it were filmed on a soundstage, which is why I think it has such a unique look from any of his other movies. I
like adore the Box Canyon.
Yeah. The Box Canyon part. And the strangest thing to me is the car chase when they're actually following the UFOs that are flying around. It is so, like, that perfectly encapsulates what I've always wanted to do with Small Town Monsters, what I've wanted Small Town Monsters to kind of be, is it, that is encapsulated in that one scene. But that is clearly a stage. Like, they go around a corner, and, like, you can tell that it's like, there's no dirt there. That's like a mound of, like, plastic or something that's made to look like dirt. Like, it's very clearly, he does the same thing in E.T., where the forests are, like, clearly a stage. And it's funny because when we were doing some of the initial discussions for the SDM show, my you know, we wanted to have a host and everything. I wanted the host to be on a soundstage that looks like you're in the forest in E.T., where you see the town in the distance and you're like, clearly it's a set, but it has this weird reality.
The ferns are surrounding the
where it's like speaker. an unreality or something. Yeah. Anyway, that is, you know, like I talk about Earth versus the Flying Saucers, though, is equally rooted in ufology. It's just the ufology of the late 1940s. And that's one of the first flying saucer movies. It was very early 1950s. I want to say 53. Positive.
It was based on Donald Kehoe and all that.
And it says it in the credits of the movie.
Yep.
So yeah, those. What about you? I just want to rant for like 20 minutes.
Well, I think, I mean, Close Encounters has to be at the top. And I think my reaction to that as a kid was kind of a disappointment, honestly, because it was not what I was expecting at all. And that's partially what I wanted to talk about, I guess, was how films have sort of been, in a sense, a reaction to the public sentiment of what these UFOs represent. So, you know, in the 50s, you have, it's a war, right? I mean, it's the flying saucers, the aliens are coming, and they have bad intentions. They want to conquer the world. And then you get to the 70s, and all of a sudden you have Close Encounters, where they want to be friends, evidently. And as a kid, I was really sort of, you know, six, 7 years old at the time, I was kind of confused by this, because this is sort of contemporary with Star Wars, which is a lot of fighting and a lot of flying around and stuff. And I guess I wasn't ready for how reality-based the movie was, first of all. And then secondly, there was no, I mean, aside from the fact that the kid disappears from the house, there's really not a scary element to it. You know, it ends up they have peaceful intentions, and there wasn't a sense of conflict that I could easily deal with as a child. But as I grew up and got more, you know, of a background of UFO knowledge, I guess, reports and patterns, then I began to see what this movie really represents is, like you said earlier, it's a reaction to, and in some ways presenting again, some of the biggest UFO cases, all within sort of this semi-fictional framework, and coming out at the end saying, you know, maybe they don't want to blow up the world or take over civilization. Maybe they just want to interact with people. And that represented a pretty big sea change, I think, that then Spielberg would go on to explore in films like E.T., where once again it was an even more pointed and maybe more commercial marriage of human beings with extraterrestrials, and, you know, can we communicate and get along?
You could almost do a whole episode on Spielberg and the UFO topic in general, because it doesn't end with just the movies. It's also television. I mean, he explored the topic repeatedly. Mm-hmm. Something I found out today, he used to tell people he was born in 1947. He was born in 1948. He said 1947 because that's the year that the flying saucer was born, mm-hmm. and Roswell became, you know, everywhere, was everywhere. So Spielberg, I don't buy into the necessarily like the conspiracy theories revolving around like Spielberg and being part of like some disinfo campaign for the government. I will say I've talked to people in Hollywood who are highly placed in Hollywood. You know who I'm talking about this before. Just cause like we actually were hanging out and we watched a show about like the disinfo campaign of aliens in Hollywood throughout Hollywood history. And I think there's actually a show on like Gaia that is entirely about that. But this person that is based in Hollywood, works in Hollywood on very prestigious films or whatever, told me that he 100% believes that those movies are being steered in a certain direction. So take that for what you will, but like I've never really bought into the Spielberg as some sort of disinfo campaign manager. But it is interesting to watch his I don't know if it's his outlook on UFOs, but you look at him in 1977. What year did the Vietnam War end? Is that 70?
Early 70s.
It's earlier in the 70s. So you're at kind of a bright point in history. I mean, you really are. Like, you've got, you know, we're not engaged in any major war at that point. Vietnam War is over. You've got Spielberg making Close Encounters of the Third Kind, which is a very hopeful movie. And then he makes E.T., which is probably even more, you know, some people, there's a weird pushback against E.T. I don't know if you've noticed this, especially in like the circles we run in. There's a weird like push resistance to E.T. But after E.T., I'm trying to think if he made any other, are there anything up until we get to War of the Worlds?
When did Crystal Skull came after that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't think so. I think it, yeah, War of the Worlds, man, that was.
Because he goes, you go from E.T. to War of the Worlds.
Yeah.
But I always, and he said this before, War of the Worlds was a response to 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
And so like it's interesting to watch him go from that very like hopeful time to the time directly after 9/11 and making War of the Worlds. Mm-hmm. And then I guess he kind of does return to the peaceful, happy aliens with Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, which I'll go out on a limb and say, I actually really enjoy as a movie. I know there's a hatred for that film.
Yeah, I don't hate that movie at all.
No, I quite enjoy the movie actually. Mm-hmm. Too much CG though. Like get out of here. Get out of here, Lucas, with your CG. That's a very flying saucer movie too. I mean, the end goes full scale, like sci-fi, silly sci-fi.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I've read all the stuff about Spielberg supposedly being in league with like Jimmy Carter. That was supposedly Close Encounters was like his favorite movie. And then Reagan and Spielberg, supposedly Spielberg, you know, has this meeting with Reagan and shows him, E.T. and supposedly that like inspired Reagan to do that famous speech, you know, where he said if aliens like came to Earth today and so, you know.
He's lost. He's alone. And he's 3 million light years from home. In spring 2002, only in theaters.
I'm keeping you.
Steven Spielberg's masterpiece will come to life.
Home. Home.
For a whole new generation. Experience the mystery.
Wait, what is it?
Something scary.
The wonder.
What's happening?
The call.
E.T.
And Spielberg is tied to presidents. He's tied to some very powerful people. He's probably the most powerful director there's ever been. I can't think of anyone that's on the same level as Spielberg. So to have someone that's at that point, very tied to the Clintons in particular, but someone who's that powerful, also having such a rooted interest in strange phenomena. It doesn't end with UFOs. He was also, mm-hmm. he's also has a vested interest in the supernatural. And he's done shows like the greatest story ever told? What was the show that used to be on that he executive produced?
Oh, like an anthology show?
Yeah, the anthology show. I can't think of it.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
I mean, who was he the one that directed the, cause he directed one of the segments in the, Twilight Zone movie.
Mm-hmm.
Is he the one that did the airplane with mm-hmm. the wing? Yeah. That's a terrifying scene by
yeah.
the way. The original was scary enough, let alone to have to go through it again.
Right. John Lithgow was the,
yeah,
the
know,
guy in the plane.
Just get completely off rails here for a second. My first experience watching that movie, I was in a hotel somewhere, and we used to, you know, my family used to travel together. So you got six people in one tiny hotel room. I'm probably like 7 years old. Everything terrified me. Scooby-Doo scared me. Like, everything scared me. And everyone in the room was asleep except me, and I was up watching TV in a corner. I would turn the TV all the way so it wouldn't, you know, the light wouldn't bother people. I had it turned way down. I don't think I could hear it, but I saw Dan Aykroyd, and I'm like, he's a funny guy, and I knew what Ghostbusters was. And my only knowledge of Dan Aykroyd was that he was like a funny dude. And I'm watching it, and it's the hitchhiking. It's the hitchhiking. And I had no idea what it was. Oh, it's the hitchhiker section of the Twilight. It was that Twilight Zone? It was the Twilight Zone movie, right? And he's in the car, and I can't hear anything. All I know is, like, he turns and looks out the window, and when he turns back, he is a monster. And...
did you scream?
I fell out of my seat. No, I remember this to this day. I was sitting in this, huddled in this corner by myself, my family sleeping over here, and it scared me so bad. And to this day, that sticks with me. Like, Dan Aykroyd turning into a monster.
Wow.
In that movie. Sorry, back on the rails.
Well, okay. What do you think, you know, when people allege that Spielberg was part of some information disinformation campaign, what was the outcome that they were hoping to achieve? To think more kindly of an alien presence or what?
Well, it didn't stick around because then he makes War of the Worlds.
Movies like Independence Day come along, you know, mega blockbuster popcorn movies that are back to the aliens destroying everything. No,
that's the interesting thing about Hollywood, is if you're going with the idea that it's all part of some information disinformation campaign, shouldn't there be a preset sort of pattern that they're going to follow, you know, like some sort of message that they're pushing, but there isn't. You've got movies like The Arrival, you've got movies like Close Encounters of the Third Kind, Contact, and then you've got your Independence Days.
Yeah.
District 9 is arguably like one of those, you know, like, oh, man, I love that movie.
Yeah.
I really love that movie. I really wish that director would get his act together, because he's never lived up to the potential of that movie. Mm-hmm. I adore that movie. But yeah, there doesn't seem like there's a single message behind it, unless the message is just like, hey, there's aliens and this is how you might react when they come.
Yeah. I mean, that's. Right. If there is a message, that must be it. Mm-hmm. That they're there, and that's about all we know. And in that regard, then they're a lot like us. I mean, they could be peaceful. They could be warlike. They could want to just wipe us out. We don't know. But don't be surprised when they show up.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe that's it.
Maybe that's all. They're here, and this is what these are what the outcomes might be. I mean, at this point, we kind of have seen. What is your take on Contact? That's a good one, because I never think of that movie. And I saw that in theaters.
I saw it in theaters, too. And I remember... I wasn't disappointed by it. It was drier than I thought it would be, I guess. Because, of course, you know, I don't know. I knew going in it wasn't going to be, like, spaceship flights and explosions and stuff like that. And it ended up being pretty thoughtful, but the way the ended, you know, the ending with the vision or whatever happened there, I just like, okay, you know. Yeah,
that's the way I am. It never landed with me.
No.
And it was a dry version. It was a dry sort of cold version of Close Encounters That was my kind of
first
like
half hour of that movie. It's great. Pretty much into.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh yeah. The way it opens, going through the solar system and everything's really, I remember there was a warning on the door to the theater for that movie. Someone had written it out in Sharpie.
Really?
And they had taped it to the door, and it was like, there are periods in this movie where there is no sound. Don't come complaining that there's no speakers. Cause like once that opening, eventually there's no sound. You're just drifting through outer space for like 3 minutes or whatever. There's aspects of that movie I really enjoyed, but I overall was very let down by that, by that film. Close Encounters, Contact, 2001, A Space Odyssey would have to be considered like kind of a UFO alien movie, right? Do you know what 2001 A Space Odyssey is about? We should have my wife on this show because she's read the book, so she might be.
Yeah, I mean, I'll just go full disclosure and say no. Okay. I mean, I don't really know what it's about.
I don't have a clue.
I mean, I know what the parts of it are, but I don't know what it means. People claim to know. I should probably read up on that.
Favorite alien invasion movie?
Oh my goodness. Do you have one?
It's Earth. I think it's Earth versus saucers. Flying saucers. I do love like Mars Attacks, just because it's such a send up of all of that. And you know, like what I did, I have very fond memories of seeing the, so actually, okay, there's two alien movies that you go first. I'm going to mention one you've never heard of.
The original Day the Earth Stood Still.
Okay. Yeah. That's a great one.
Is probably my favorite because it's
different.
Yeah, it's understated in a weird way, and very old school Hollywood at the same time. And I remember growing up getting all the old like science fiction books out of the library, and you always had pictures of the robot, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah,
I'm frantically trying to find this stupid movie now. I just had a whole conversation with my wife about it the other day. She'd never heard of it. And I bet I'm not going to find it. So there was a movie I saw in theaters. Hold on. 80s alien movies. Okay, so I have... this is ridiculous. This list. There's a movie that no one ever talks about, no one knows about, with that it was the second movie I saw in theaters. Mars something? It wasn't Mars Attacks. I'm gonna end up having to cut out this entire section of the show. This is gonna drive me crazy. Yeah, it's not listed. Okay. I just talked to my wife about it too. She'd never heard of it. Just came to I'm furious. Favorite alien invasion movies. Yeah, Earth versus the Flying Saucers. I'm a big fan of The Blob, which isn't an alien or isn't a UFO movie necessarily, but it's a good one. Mm-hmm. And then there was a movie at one point. I actually wrote a script with Mark and Jeff Kunze, Jeff who did the poster for Minerva Monster, called The Creature Who Came From the Beyond, I believe it was. And it was a send up of those. It was kind of like the lost skeleton of Kadavra, kind of thing. It was going to be, but like a send up of those old 1950s mm-hmm. movies. So that's a very like important genre to me in time in film. But there's an 80s movie that I cannot think of the name now that I saw as a kid. And it's basically these aliens crash land on Earth and they're friendly aliens. Cause I was a kid in the 80s and E.T. was the big movie. Mac and Me came out.
Oh my gosh.
Which was like the creepiest looking.
Yeah.
Alien ripoff of E.T. there was. That became like a big deal in the 80s. Then mm-hmm. it was like there was cartoons, there was Alf was on TV.
Alf, yeah.
I mean, there is an interesting there's that weird like shift of how aliens are portrayed over time, and I'm not even necessarily talking about like invaders versus non-invaders. I'm talking more about like they were very, very early on. It seemed like they were portrayed no matter what as like sinister and highly intellectual, like much more intellectual mm-hmm. than us. They were always on another level. And then it seemed like over time they were kind of dumbed down for a little while. And you've got the like monster movies of the late 50s and 60s mm-hmm. where rather than like it's like these intellectual, like alien invaders, they're like monsters that are somehow flying around. And
right.
The one I'm thinking of, I can't think, I own it on Blu-ray. I can't think of it. It's the one with the huge invisible alien running around the desert. It's a great one. Anyway. Huh. I've always thought that there is a weird like shift in the way they were portrayed for a short period of time. It wasn't very long. It's for like one decade.
There's the one that's 20 million miles to Earth.
Yeah, that's Harryhausen.
That's Harryhausen. Yeah. Where the
I've got the
yeah
yeah I love that one. I love
and that fits Harryhausen. The profile of like somehow this dinosaur almost, you know, bipedal monster comes out of
an alien crusher, which doesn't make any sense. Do you have any opinions on Disney, Walt Disney and UFOs? There was the sort of buried Walt Disney documentary about aliens. And then there's also the really creepy, genuinely creepy. You need to check it out if you haven't. Around the same time that their alien ride launched at Disney World back in the 90s, they put out a documentary, and this aired on their what was it, Sunday night? This aired on their like Disney Sunday night family thing, and it gets into anal probing. And it goes 100% with like, we're going to tell you all about implants, the whole thing. Is a Disney documentary, and it is.
Does that exist anywhere?
Oh, yeah. You can find it on YouTube. Okay. And you might be able to find the other one, the older one. I'll have to try to find them for you. But the 90s one is genuinely creepy.
Wonderful
World of Disney. But like, we're going to get into alien implants, and they go full tilt with it. And it's really weird because that is one of those situations where you almost could buy into some sort of information campaign or like disclosure, soft disclosure going on through like a corporation.
Well,
because
it's such
a
weird context.
You need to watch it if you haven't before. It's very, very interesting.
Yeah, my only point of connection is the trivia that in Forbidden Planet, when the creature finally is observable, those are Walt Disney artists making the creature
really
visible. Yeah,
that I never knew.
Yeah,
the Escape to Witch Mountain or Escape to Witch Mountain. That movie is very rooted in ufology.
Yes,
which I didn't realize until I watched the old one more recently. And that is another one where it's almost like inspired by the ufology, the UFO lore of the time. And even the remake gets into like Men in Black and all that stuff.
Right. Yeah. We haven't even mentioned Men in Black with
Will
Smith. Tommy Lee Jones, yeah. Will Smith.
Yeah. That's another one where, it seems much more, they're creating their own universe, but I do know the comic book was heavily inspired by the actual Men in Black, and especially like the stuff that was going on in Point Pleasant with the Mothman. I'm trying to think of where we can go before we end this. I want to end this on like some sort of like what top five, do your top five alien UFO movies.
Top five alien. Oh, wow. Okay. They have to be in any sort of rank.
Top five. Well, maybe they should.
Let's go. Get Close Encounters out of the way. Mm-hmm. I think one thing I'll say about it, because I agree with you as far as visually and everything, it's just a gorgeous film to watch. But the other thing that I think, one of the things that persuaded Hynek to get involved and to accept the invitation to be, is that in the story itself, the scientists emerge as like they're useful, they're helpful. And in so many of the alien invasion films of the past, you know, the scientists only get so far and then it all falls apart, or they're, you know, they're drummed out of the room.
Or they're just wrong.
Like,
that's the whole thing that they push in Mars Attacks that's so hilarious, is Pierce Brosnan is convinced that they're peaceful. And he's he keeps telling everyone how excited he is to meet them, you know, like, and he's pretorably wrong.
Yeah. Yep. So, Close Encounters. It doesn't go far enough. I love E.T. I guess I wasn't completely aware of the pushback, except for like the numerous t-shirts that are out there that show Elliot getting eaten by Godzilla, things like that. But, I had everything E.T. I had the picture disc with Michael Jackson and E.T. and all that stuff. I love that story because I think, if I'm not mistaken, I was like within 1 or 2 years of being Elliot You know, so it was just like
hit
a movie.
You at the right time.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And so I guess that's enough on that.
I feel like as a kid, you have no appreciation for Close Encounters. I didn't like it when I saw it as a kid, but you love E.T. And then you get a little older in life and you have this appreciation that that comes into play for Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get to War of the Worlds and it's whatever.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't put his War of the Worlds in my top five, but I will say, to me, one of the most chilling scenes in cinema, personally, is when they're like waiting for that barge or that bridge.
Yeah, it's terrifying.
And the guy pulls up in his van or whatever, and he just gets killed.
Yeah,
like in cold blood. To me, that's one of the most disturbing things to ever happen in any movie.
It's a great movie. Well, no. It's the set pieces are spectacular. It's probably some of his best set pieces are in that film. And the barge scene's great. The first, when they first hit, it's kind of terrifying when they're coming through the town and like just wiping people out. There's an entire section of that movie that drags it down. It's where they go and they're hiding out in the basement of
yeah, right.
And
that, ironically, that's because it stays so close to the original source material.
Yeah.
He could have X'd that out completely and it'd be just fine.
But I like that movie, but that part, there's like an entire section. There's a couple sections in that movie actually where I'm just not on board. Also, Tom Cruise is like an everyday guy. Doesn't work. But
right.
anyone else in that role.
Yeah.
I like Tom Cruise as an actor too, but that's not, yeah. Anyway, I cut you off.
Oh, no. Okay. So,
E.T. Close Encounters.
E.T. Close Encounters. Here's a question. Does Cloverfield count?
Yeah.
Okay.
Right? Yeah.
I'd put Cloverfield in my top five. Becoming,
yeah. Really?
Huh. Yeah. I mean, that holds up to me. And it's almost the type of movie I like more the more I watch it. Just because I love the stuff where early on it's so suggestive or reminiscent. I mean, it's clearly 9/11 with monsters.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something I don't know, I'm compelled to watch that and live in that for a little bit. I'm impressed with that.
Yeah.
Because once again, I mean, it gets you into this very modern, there's no way of telling what this wants. And it's destroying us. That's all that we know it's happening. And I don't know. There's something about that. It reminds me of Night of the Living Dead in a weird way.
You know what? He kind of gets into aliens in AI.
Mm-hmm.
It's a different type. It's the robotic, you know, like they're not coming from another planet. But it almost is a... It almost gets into aliens in that movie. The ending of that movie is tragic. It's a very heartbreaking ending.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, okay, so you're
so
like three.
Three, right? Four would be Day the Earth Stood Still because of just how that captures that moment in time of ufology. And like you said, the super intelligent agent of the aliens and just, you know, the utter control that they have over our society, just shutting everything down.
I came here to give you these facts. But if you threaten to extend your violence, this earth of yours will be reduced to a burned-out cinder.
But he's a robot. Without you, what could he do?
There's no limit to what he could do. He could destroy the Earth.
All vehicles, close in. Let's go.
Just because they want to. And sort of the social commentary that goes along with that film is just embedded in that film. So that's four. What would number five be?
I'm going to side with you on two of those, so I'm not even going to go through.
Okay.
I'll add three.
I'll just say I'll throw in 20 million miles to Earth just for Harryhausen's sake, you know, and his Earth versus the flying saucers. Now that what's Is that Harryhausen? The one where they crash into the Capitol building and all that stuff?
That's Harryhausen.
Tip of the cap to Ray on that one.
I've got a whole list of 50s ones in front of me that I got to run through real quick because I'm trying to think of the name. So Universal did This Island Earth, and I just discovered it in the last year. That's going to be in my top five. Like, it's really cool, especially when they actually get to the alien planet, which is the moon, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Something like that. This Island Earth, Earth versus the Flying Saucers, Close Encounters of the Third Kind, E.T., and it might be District 9. I really do love that movie.
Yeah.
It's a different, completely different type of UFO movie. It's not really a UFO movie, but it's such an interesting story. And integrating aliens into Earth's already existing, you know, it's a really cool movie.
Yeah.
It doesn't get enough play. All right, we got to wrap up. We will be back next week. We're going to talk about the 2019 Small Town Monsters Kickstarter. So that should be launching right around the time of the show. Like we said at the beginning of the episode, if you want to tune in to the live broadcast, that will be going out live February 7th, 7 p.m. on Small Town Monsters page. So follow us there and tune in to see Mark and I and some of the other STM people talking about stuff we're working on.
Monsteropolis is proudly presented on Wadsworth Community Radio 97.1 FM or streaming live at wadsworthcommunityradio.com and is proudly underwritten by Thurber's Jewelers on the Square in downtown Wadsworth.